We're still backstage now while I adjust this, but how many people know that the reason that backstage is called the green room? Do you know why? It's really great. If we track everything back to its originating liberating impulse, it all reveals itself. The green room's called the green room from Greek theater because it was sacred to Dionysus, the green man. So every actor, regardless of their role, villain or hero, would spend time in the green room dedicating themselves to the flora and fauna of this earth. So here we are, doing just that, and we're off. So there's a traditional Sicilian fairy tale opening that says there's five ways of traveling, walking, crawling, swimming, flying, and how we journey now. Woohoo! Woohoo! And in Arabic fairy tales, they begin by saying, it was and it was not. You know, or as Rev Ike says, if we can dream it up, we can dream it down. And that's part of why we're gathered here at this time of dire beauty. So I have Muti from Rod Suskin and the Sangomas of South Africa. Muti means power and medicine. True power is that which heals. And the model is we don't source power, we invite it. And dedicated gatherings, dedicated acts of beauty invite power into the world. And the modern world's misunderstanding is that it's mistaken dominance and control for power. But Pluto would say, let go of control so real power can come on in. You know, we know that, you know, throughout human history, the death and resurrection show, it was always gatherings like this that would invite power in and then offer it a template, a poem. You know, what's going on at the equinoxes and solstices? O literal and symbolic light of the sun, come on in and illumine this painting, this poem, this writing, this story at the back of the cave. Come on in. So the death and resurrection show. So here's the Muti that I've syncretized. Syncretism is a sacrament from Stella Coyote. I live with an actual coyote. She's an Aries. She's going to turn 19 in April. She sends her regards and her fur. I've lived with an actual coyote longer than I've lived with a human. I don't look at that with despair or hope. I just go, huh, look at that. It's like a fairy tale. But every time I go out the door, I go, oh, Stella Coyote, I'm off to make the world a more respectful place for coyotes. And she's like, well, tell them to speed it up, okay? So we have coyote medicine, which we deeply need, and I've mixed it with tobacco from Syria when I was there 12 years ago, when it was still under dictatorship, but beautiful at that time. And so we say, with the Muti, we say, O spirit of citizen trickster redeemer, within each one of us, awaiting this time of dire beauty, open the path before every dedicated, knowledgeable, wonderful person here, that we may be of greatest good while having the most serious fun time. May it be so. As a great trickster ally said to me once at a time of great, like, but not as as we're in now, he said, no, pick yourself off the floor. If we're not having fun, we're just not serious enough. And we go, that's the spirit. So, dark times call for dark humor. So, I think we begin with Pluto. A friend of mine created a wonderful Pluto dating blessing, which I like. He said, we would wish for you a relationship that's dangerous in a good way. It's like, well, that's fun. So, a toast. Banquets are for toasts. And a friend of mine got a really Pluto toast. She was in Soviet Georgia when it was that. She walked into a smoky bar. The regulars fell quiet, and a man looked at, you know, a hush thing, and looked at her, and he said, I drink to your death. And may you be buried in a casket made of 100-year-old oak, of which I plant the seed today. It's like, wait for it, act 4, before act 5, there we go. That's what's called a prospodokian, when the end of the thing completely changes the beginning. The most famous one on the internet that's really good is, I want to die peacefully in my sleep like my grandfather, not yelling and screaming like the passengers in his car. So, So it starts off as a kind of saccharine Hallmark card, and then quite a different picture, right? Yeah. So we go, yeah. So it's also, a friend said, you know what happens when you play horror movies backwards? Everyone gets healed by chainsaws, and then we all go camping. And wonderful late great ally Reuben Snake said, here's a little bit of Native American wisdom for you. If we don't change our direction, we're likely to end up where we're headed. So here we are, ready to do all those things. So we call on everything. You know, this beautiful language to which we're dedicated is so powerful and rousing and so effective as a personal and cultural strategy now. You know, everything. We say, you know, in the realm of Neptune, metaphor and dreams are the incarnational garb whereby power enters the world. It's the power of blessing, power of metaphor. So I've been using a friend of mine's dream. It's short. As so perfect, you know, from the winter solstice on to now in its astrological pertinence. And she had this dream 20 years ago when she was at Standing Rock, right? So everything is reporting in. And the dream is very simple. In the dream, there's a dark, we might even say evil, figure. And remember, in Aramaic, which is the vernacular language that Jesus would have spoken, what got translated to us as evil in Aramaic means unripe. And what do you do with unripe things? You put them in a brown paper bag, right? So just imagine a giant brown paper bag over Congress. That's really good. So in the dream, there's an evil figure stirring a cauldron, right? Pluto's cauldron. You know, and it's like the Negredo in alchemy. Bad vapors of moral ambiguity and worse are coming out of the cauldron. And a voice in the dream says to my friend the dreamer, you must take hold of the stirring stick and stir the cauldron in the other direction. So she makes her way through tremendous resistance. And the minute she touches the stirring stick, the evil figure vanishes. And then she slowly begins stirring the cauldron in the other direction. I think this is a perfect incarnational metaphor. We have Pluto's cauldron, in which it's a wild story storm of Jupiter Uranus, blah, 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 and Uranus trine Saturn in Sagittarius. It's the story stirring stick. It all depends on who's taking hold of the story stirring stick. It's a very useful thing for all of us, individually and collectively, to imagine ourselves putting our hand on the Saturn Sagittarius, the story stirring stick, and stirring the cauldron in the other direction. Because one of the things that's clear, because I went to Cleveland, I went to the Republican Convention and the Democratic Convention on your behalf, because I will go anywhere. I've been to CPAC, to the Conservative Political Action Conference, because I'll go anywhere. Just to go, are there allies, in the darkest of places? And there are. It's one of our themes and one of our great skills with this beautiful language, that whatever we speak to in another is the part of them we're inviting to dance with the corresponding part of ourselves. The reason we don't want to judge, we want to discern, but the reason we don't want to judge somebody is then we're inviting the least evolved part of them to dance with the least evolved part of us. Never a pretty thing. But I want to say Jupiter-Uranus, surprising language, surprising story, liberates everybody. But, you know, beneath your chairs in an invisible realm, everybody has a magic backpack with all kinds of really powerfully wonderful metaphors to engage. So we all have, you know, beneath your chair invisibly, a harumphitude composter, which is very important, you know, before we communicate, especially across boundaries, to compost our harumphitude. You know, it's like Scorpio rising people who say, I was very polite to that person, and they flipped out. We go, no, 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 no. You thought they were a dingbat, and they knew it, you know. We're always complicitous in the drama, melodrama unfolding. So at CPAC, you know, there were, you know, Ayn Rand, right-wing economists, you know, following somebody really with a black eye patch and a cane. It's like, the gods are like, how simple do we have to make this for you humans, right? And I had a kind of, attitude, but then it was like, no, compost or umphitude. And they came over to me, because I always look like I look, and they go, and you, who are you? And I said, I'm Coyote Network News. I'm a mythological news service for the trickster redeemer within us all. And they said, that is so cool, right? And then we were off into an interesting place, all right? So there's that. And again, you know, at CPAC, you know, it's the Dementors, Scott Walker, but there's hope because all these Dementors had their teenage children who were like not buying it. It's like, your teenage son's gonna get you. But also, again, you know, whatever, again, our willingness to cross borders is especially important now for all of us with this beautiful language. You know, friends said, let's smuggle you into the Reagan banquet, or the Reagan cocktail party, and they did, you know, and I was wearing a little wolf amulet and everything. And so, person just magnetized going, wolves, and I said, the wolf model of leadership. Wolves have one of the most wonderful models of leadership on this planet. You know, wolves don't operate on dominance, they operate on charisma. And in wolf culture, charisma means who initiates play best. Let's go hunting, but also play. Wolves play every 30 minutes, no matter what, even if they're hunted or must hunt. Pretty great. We're going to keep that in mind. And so I was telling, and also you can tell the wolf leader within 10 days of birth because it's the wolf pup with the lowest resting heartbeat. I think that's a great model of leadership. The coolest wolf who engages the playful ingenuity of the pack. This is very Saturn-Uranus. We'll again play with that. So the person said, oh, this is so great. And he said, I own the largest privately owned boat in the world. And I go, well, you must love the ocean. And he's like, I do. I'd forgotten that, but I do, you know. And then he was like, come be my date at the Reagan banquet. I'm like, all right, there we go. So we're at the table with all the Dementors, you know, and he said, oh, you know, I haven't talked about Joseph Campbell and mythology in decades. You're feeding something in me, right? And there's a great photograph, you know, in which you can see the part of him that wants to be mythologically invited to a larger game. You know, and then there's kind of the Republican naps inside him. There's this war inside, you know. And at a certain point, he said, George W. Bush, one of the greatest presidents ever. And I go, as long as I've known you, 40 minutes, I've never heard you say such a crazy thing. I think you might be possessed. And he was like, possessed? No, he wasn't affronted. He was surprised, right? And kind of considered. So, but then when he sent me email with the photo, you know, his title was CEO Petroleum Inc. Going, whew, all right, here we go. So I did send him Amory Lovin's green energy policy for the military, and he responded back. He said, I remember Amory when we were both working on solar panels in the 70s, and. Now I'm a big petroleum guy, you know, but what I don't trust about the renewables is the money. So I go back to our team and I go, they want money, they want numbers anyway. So there's that. Whatever we speak to one another, you know, and I do cross borders, I do talk to conservatives, I mean all kinds of things, and I'll tell you a little bit about Cleveland. But first our creation myth, you know, here we are right now, you know, Jupiter rising in the east and opposite Uranus, square Pluto, pretty exciting. You know, Jupiter and Uranus are the two biggest path openers, you know, and they do, Uranus is trining Saturn, which I find so beautiful. On Earth as it is in heaven. Because one of the things that's happening now on Earth is that wolves and coyotes are mating as an evolutionary advantage. And I've lived with a hybrid wolf and I lived with a half coyote still. I know these cultures pretty well, they're quite different. But the evolutionary advantage is wolves, even though they play, very Saturn, right? Saturn pack, everybody's got a job in the pack. Coyotes, very Uranus, not so much, but a spectacular, wily, witty, disobedient intelligence, you know, very trickster. But the evolutionary advantage, see how we might all want this, what would it be like to have a wolf pack by which one was supported but also contributed that encouraged each one of our Uranus? Each one of our wily, ingenious coyote. And because I know coyotes so well, I so admire them, you know, they are escape artists. And we want to be escape artists. But also what I like is that they have a kind of bodhisattva, not sentimental, a kind of bodhisattva, because I've seen films and I've also seen my own clever friend Stella Coyote. They will watch humans laying traps secretly. There's a hidden camera that's captured this. And they'll follow along behind the humans, dum 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 dum, and they'll dig up the traps, spring it with a stick, right, and then just for attitudinal flourish, pee all over it, right. And I think that's something to take home in your gift bag, just as an attitude. So we say, before humans, long ago, it's our bodhisattva citizen trickster creation myth. There was trickster, bodhisattva coyote hurling liberating lightning to set the whole shebang going. And this sizzle, this ingenuity, this genius, this nature's evolutionary ingenuity that has no category about success-fail. Other parts of us do. It's like, try that, try that, try that. Let's put big ears on this mammal, see if the little critter lasts for a couple million years. Try it, try it, try it. But it sizzles through time, you know, through everything, every now and then getting constrained by different forms of inquisition, always escaping, but also part of the, you know, the citizen trickster, the model of a new quality of heroism, you know, as protector, not protester, as protector, you know, is that it's interested in, like Scheherazade, the great woman of the Arabian Nights, the power of the woman storyteller, to liberate women, liberate the land, liberate even the tyrant who has hardened his heart. And that's a quality of medicine I think we all want to be able to invite in now. So it sizzles through everything. There we go, you know, through geometry and curves, you know, and then into each one of us. You know, it's somewhere in each one of us stirring now, because it is a dangerous time. But beauty and danger have always worked in nature together. And it's part of our dynamic to track everything back to its originating liberating impulse before it got bamboozled, hoodwinked, conditioned. I'm always looking up words, so I did just learn the word orthodox. Ortho means straight, like orthodontistry, right? So orthodox is straight teaching, and we go, we like our teaching curvy, thank you very much, you know. We go, we track everything back before bamboozled, hoodwinked, imprisoned, you know, and setting it free. What did it want to be before it got, you know, hoodwinked and bamboozled? So it also says, you know, part of us, the trickster part of us, has a bag of lightning, also metaphorically under your table in your magic backpack. And coyote within us all hurls lightning, you know, at the circle of habit and liberates it into a spiral. Just, out there we go, setting it free. So I love Jupiter opposite Uranus. Also Jupiter, you know, rising, medieval astrologers called that having a guardian angel. We can take that on any level we want. But it says there's a part of us that when we stare too deeply into the abyss, like, whoa, comes up behind us, gently puts its arms around our shoulders and go, time to go home for a cup of tea. There you go, there you go. But I also think it's part of our attitude. You know, each planetary intelligence that resides within each one of us and connects us to the world has a different attitude. But Jupiter's predominant attitude is curiosity. Like, God, I feel like hell. How interesting. You know, I wonder how people get through this. How interesting. And that quality is also a buoyancy, a curiosity, you know, that rises up now. But Jupiter opposite Uranus, Jupiter is also the power of story, the power of blessing. The liberating power of blessing. And we might say the oppressor is always unwittingly seeking the medicine of what he or she oppresses. You know, England needed the metaphysic of India. America really needs underneath the incredible beauty of the Middle East, underneath all of that strife, when we go down deeper, deeper, because it's a culture fundamentally woven together by daily blessing. Even now, I've been speaking to friends who just got back from Damascus, and they go, life is also continuing. There's many things going on. But we said, you know, with my friend Deborah, who lived there and who took me around Syria, you know, what if we reframed refugees as pilgrims? Because Bedouin manners, we were once in a windswept village and we wanted to see the exquisite beehive houses that are extraordinary for centuries that Syrian villagers make. They last forever. They're an ingenious architectural style. And we drove up and my friend Deborah said, let's just knock on a door. I'm like, really? We're the only car, the only Westerners. And she goes, yeah. So we knock on a door and a beautiful woman with a million children opens the door and then goes, oh, strangers, how wonderful. How wonderful. And see, the Bedouin, if we could translate that into our, tease it into the molecules of our American culture, we would say, oh, welcome. We would be Bedouin. Welcome. You must have traveled so far. You must have endured so much. You must have stories to tell, and they must be the stories that we most need now. That would be the Bedouin quality. But also, the Middle East, it's blessing poker. May it go well for you. May it go even more well for you. May pomegranate blossoms unfurl before your feet, and may pomegranate blossoms unfurl before your feet and your lover kiss you on the neck where you like it. It goes back and forth. I see your blessing and raise you one. And we know that, uninitiated Mars, destroying the world, Mars with no kinship, what it wants is Venus. Again, the redefinition of heroism, beauty. Yeah, I call my style of dress and people who give me things Middle Eastern, Southwestern, because everything I'm wearing was made in a war zone. It was beauty made in a war zone, right? And so that's a lot of what we want. My friend also says, salam, peace, and shalom, peace. And she says, what it means is not the absence of war, it's the presence of oneness. That's what salam means. And again, the small things that were so moving, just young waiter saying to my friend, anything else, madam? And you say, salam tek, only your peace. It's like, oh, it's so beautiful, the small things woven. We say, part of our dynamic is we're learning forever, how to give to each part of our psyche represented by a planet the work it does best. And in some ways, I think Saturn is least understood. Saturn is really good at setting intention, defining things, taking vows. But we often then burden it with, well, how am I going to do that? How am I going to do that? And I would offer that that's how is not Saturn's job. Jupiter and Uranus chime in and say, we'll do the booking. You tell us what. We'll do the booking in ways that make you bark with laughter and reaffirm that quality of synchronicity. Because trickster is a part of us that loves against all odds. And after this election, I go, against all odds? I guess it wasn't against all odds enough. Whoa, okay. But that idea of doing the booking. So here we are. We've elected the Inquisition and the War on Reverence. It's very old. It's a very old War on Reverence. I've been conversing with a wonderful woman scholar, Max Dashu, her great website, The History of Suppressed Archives. She's a really deep scholar. And so we also love tracking things back to its originating impulse. Because each one of these powerful transits, Uranus, Neptune, Pluto, they're like doing a bazillion years of spiritual psychotherapy in about a minute to decondition. So she says, before in Northern Europe, before the Norse gods were the Norns, the weaving women. The weaving women go way back. And women used to weave, and as they wove, they would enchant. They would sing blessings into the fabric so that whoever wore that fabric would be enveloped in this blessing. And the Orthodox Christians came along and go, no singing, no blessing, none of that. Only priesthood, only come through us. And we notice that you women sometimes sit in reverie by water. None of that either, right? So the War on Reverence, very old. So it's why I did notice the resonance of 11-9, 2016. 11-9, 1938 was Kristallnacht, rise of Nazi thing, where there was a, again, in the 30s in Germany, lot of yoga, lot of astrology, but people going, oh no, I don't pay attention to politics. 11-9, 1989, the fall of the Berlin Wall, consciously chosen by the Germans to redeem that date. So we know that the word inaugurate, right, comes from the augur. All if we look words up in an etymological dictionary, it just makes everything so clear. The word privilege means private law. The word respect means look again, right? But inaugurate is really great. It comes from the augur, the diviner within each one of us, who would walk out into nature, and nature by her pattern would reveal the responsible human, and then they would be inaugurated. So inaugurating a guiding story. You know, even when I went to Cleveland and Philadelphia, I have a little bumper sticker on my car going, you know, Flora Fauna 2016. Nobody really minded that. So I was, you know, working with different astrologers before and after the election, you know, and we were kind of saying, you know, prediction is kind of a booby prize. Everything now wants to get thrown into the cauldron. Everything reinvents itself. Everything into the cauldron, no matter how sacred, into the cauldron, does it no harm? And into the cauldron with the criterion, does it guide people to their own autonomy? Is it equal Mars and Venus, men and women? Is it equal humans and the rest of our relations on this planet? Is the trickster welcome? Can the truth be said without cringing? Yes, we ladle it out. No, we throw it back in there. So Daniel Gemario and I on radio, we were looking at the inaugural chart and going, how could it be so beautiful? I know some people will have, oh, it wasn't beautiful at all. Yeah. But to us it looked beautiful. How could this be? And we go, it's not so much a predictive thing, it's a generous proffering of what's available for animation. That beautiful Venus, Mars, sacred marriage, and Venus' sign of exaltation. So January 20th was kind of like Kristallnacht. January 21st was like the fall of the Berlin Wall. That was the real inauguration. That was the incredible global movement of the Women's March with many men and many young boys and many young girls. So extraordinary. Because not only do we have a conniption fit composter, but also we want to also have it. It's a harumphitude composter, which we have adaptations to compost our conniption fits, but also compost self spooking. So before the women's gathering in Washington and then everywhere in the world, I was worried because Trumpelstiltskin, that I call him. Had fired the head of the National Guard, the D.C. National Guard, 1 minute into his inauguration. And I was like, is he planning something sketchy? You know, it didn't matter, because the atmosphere, we want to talk about the power of atmosphere, was so palpably strong, nothing bad could happen. Everyone was transformed. You know, the kind of trust fund anarchists with ski masks breaking Starbucks windows the day before? No, not in evidence. The cops who'd behave badly, you know, the day before, we're wearing little pink pussy hats and looking, and we were willing to go, you look so cute, rather than again, come on out. Discourage the bad, encourage the good. Ah, I see, it's the wolves are howling. That's right. There we go. Thank you. Thank you, wolves. So that is the powerful magic that comes in dangerous times. There was part of the value also was 8 out of 9 people who showed up globally had never been to a large gathering before, and that was a good thing. There was no tired, tedious progressive, like, what do we want? Better chance. When do we want them now? It was lively and no kind of us, them, you know, speak truth to power, which I think is still unworked out issues with daddy. How about speak truth, be power more? Like, why fool around? You know, what are we creating peace? When are we creating it now? You know, why wait? Let's do it. But so that was so strong. And again, it was incredibly polite. I love, you know, the live feed from London. The Brits are smart. Their signs were like, migration is older than language. We go, oh, you smart Brits, that's so great. Build bridges, not walls. In Baltimore last night, there was a bystander training of how to stand up and protect one's neighbors. And we go, everywhere, there is the salam, the presence of oneness, the embrace, the turning out at the airports. You know, so we have myths, fairy tales, and detective novels, very similar. And detective novels, crime fiction, very, very useful. And I was wondering, you know, how old are they? So 231 BC in China is the oldest we know so far of detective fiction. And it's the same idea, what they say in 231 BC. The purpose of the magistrate each one of us really, is to dive into the underworld in order to restore human affairs to be in accord with the mandate of heaven and earth. And there's some wonderful tips, because about how do you go to the underworld. It's good to have a buddy with whom to have cheating, death, smartass, dark humor. That's really good. But also to be authentic is, as opposed to a con, is a really useful thing. And a theme from 231 BC all the way up into modern fiction is the detective part of all of us will encounter bad people in the underworld who say, I was going to kill you or rob you, but I feel that you're kind of the real deal, so I want to switch sides, but I have underworld skills you will need. You go, yeah. Well, I would put this to our team, right now, to be effective inviters. What's going down? We go, empire and dominance, row, you bastards, going on for a long time, now going down, but taking so much life with it, and underneath a curve of, a renaissance of reverent ingenuity kind of rising up. So it becomes our task to be inviters. Come on over from the thing that's coming, going down to the thing that's coming up. We need everybody. Come on over here. As Alan Watts says, no sense clinging to the rocks that are falling with you. Come on over. And there's this huge opportunity for all story crafting tellers, all good-hearted beings, as the razzmatazz swindle becomes more and more evident, to be inviters. Come on over here. We got humans really got smoked on strong suit. That was part of my experience in Cleveland, where I had a very good time because I like crossing borders. Woof woof, wanna play. And if we approach people with woof woof, wanna play, all kinds of stuff. Together it was mob mind. It was like Shirley Jackson's The Lottery. But one-on-one, it was, so I was talking to a Alabama Baptist minister delegate, and going, wanna play a game? And he's like, I love games. And I said, okay, I'm gonna give you a series of quotes, and some of them are from ISIS and some are from Trump, and you tell me which is which. He's like, oh, I love games. It was easy, right? It was easy because I go, we must destroy the world in order to recreate it and root out corruption, and whatever. And he goes, that's Trump. And I go, that's ISIS. And he laughed, right? He goes, ha, got me. So, both ISIS and Trump are the toxic cons. Everybody wants to be invited. Everybody wants their better self to be invited to a mission to root out corruption. But there's the con, which is the toxic mimic, and then the real thing. And when I stepped out of Cleveland, I had a terrible moment of knowing. Going, oh, we're getting smoked. And as I stood under the stars, I was like, I think Trumpelstiltskin is possessed by a cunning demonic retrovirus, and we must not underestimate. You can see it when it leaves him, and he's just kind of flat, and then it gleams through his eyes and his little horns. We go, I think the model of possession is actually useful, in the memosphere, in the collective mind. So if the worst of humans is being invited, it behooves us to invite the best of humans. Again, that's the purpose of ritual magic has always been to spiral into expanded group mind, expanded tolerance and wisdom. And each according to their own custom. You can sit in a cave and send out a prayer. You can be in the streets. You can be, speaking to a beautiful part of somebody's psyche and deep counseling. All of it with the dedication, is powerful. But I love the sacred trickster, and I ran into a colleague in Cleveland, Vermin Supreme, who always runs for president as a satirical thing. But he was great in Cleveland, not so good in Philadelphia. We got kicked out. But in Cleveland, he was in the street, and as the protesters, I prefer protectors, because remember the word protest comes from testes, right? It comes from grab your balls. It does. It's why women can't testify. We can ovify, right? So, but it does. Leviticus 2. But anyway, as there were protectors or demonstrators, and the cops on bicycles kind of closing in, and Vermin said, you got to disrupt tyranny at that point because fear plays into the hands of tyrants. So as the cops start to close in, he takes a megaphone, and he says to the cops, remember to do it like we rehearsed it, lads. Right? Introducing a quality of confusion in the narrative, going, whoa. And then he said, you cops on the left on your bicycles, you're not as even on the ones on the right. And they began to be like, oh. Now they were in grade school. Right? And then it got tense again, and he had the crowd chant, give the cops a raise. Give the cops a raise. But whoa, okay. Now we're in a different story. Like, whoa, again, unexpectedness. You know, unexpected language, unexpected story liberates everybody into a whole new story. You know, so we do love that. You know, part of what was going on in Cleveland was, you know, Venus was just emerging from the underworld in Leo as the evening star. And I remember Bruce Schofield, you know, teaching about the Quetzalcoatl relationship, you know, to Venus. And remember, you know, it was Venus goes to the underworld and then returns. And in Mesoamerica, it's the return of the wise leader. And there was an unfortunate historic thing that when Quetzalcoatl was supposed to return, mythologically, in everyone's heart, you know, that's when Cortez the thug showed up, and they mistook the human thug for the mythological return. Well, that's what was going on in Cleveland at that same time. Venus was, they wanted the king, and it's like, no, in every heart, not, there we go. So what is the con, the imprisoning toxic mimic, and what is the liberating trickster redeemer? Now, I love the half for real, half apocryphal, but, you know, if it's not true, let's make it true, story about in World War II, not only did the British fund Bletchley Park and Codebreakers, but they also funded the wizards and witches to gather together in England to weave, you know, to weave a spell of protection over England. And as I stood under the stars on the last night in Cleveland, and I had a terrible moment of knowing, even though later I'd go, oh, we can work with Hillary, even though she's got no story. She has no story. going, it'll be okay. No. You know, but I go, calling all wizards and witches, you know, and calling all people emerging from their witness relocation program, you know, no matter how, you know, even as astrologers, it still can be a guise, going, we need everybody, you know. And I do want to do a little honoring also our ancestors. Joan Quigley, right, right-wing Vassar astrologer, but she had her moment because she really did say to Nancy and Ronnie, you know, you got to cut this evil empire stuff with Russia. You can really work it with Gorbachev. And she really did do that. I mean, she, so we go, thank you, thank you. You know, Matthew Arnold said, to be cultured is to be acquainted with the highest possibilities of the human spirit throughout time. And I think that's a good start. But I don't want to limit it to humans. Highest possibility of wolves, highest possibility of whales, you know, all of the, all of our fellow equals really on this planet. I'd written a long time ago when I was writing a book with a tyrannical editor, when there was a flood in Pavlov's laboratory, none of the surviving dogs retained the least trace of their conditioning. You know, can the great upheaval of human events have less effect on humans than a flood on dogs? And my grumpy editor said, you know, Caroline, your readers will not know who Pavlov is. Take this whole thing out. I'm like, rah, 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 rah. But fortunately, I had an Aquarius disinterested ghost editor. She goes, no, don't worry about that. And she just sat down and typed, the name Pavlov should ring a bell. And we stuck it all back in there. We go, she had no, and we put it all back in, causing the editor to go, oh, but that was fun too, because, you know, again, we're allowed to set in motion anything of which we would be the happy recipients. You know, and at that point, you know, dealing with small tyranny and large, you know, a very useful one is, may anyone abusing power be moved to a place they can no longer harm themselves by harming others. And we take that in, going, if I were abusing power, would I mind, you know, and no, let it rip. You know, and that has some very interesting results. You know, we're re-wedding activism with animism. All these things that have been falsely estranged. We know that, I love neuroscience last year, came out with a study that said, we have discovered that humans remember things better when they're in stories. We go, you cute little whippersnapper, neuroscience, that's adorable. But we know that cultures passed on their science symbolically embedded in their fairy tales and their myths, right? And you know, in the alleged Enlightenment, you know, the kind of uninitiated Mars team said, we don't need this mythic language, this astrology stuff, this fairy tale stuff. We want just the science. And we're going to put mackerel genes in this tomato because we're unsupervised. And so what it did was it stripped away the moral cocoon, the salam, the oneness, that all knowledge be used with a moral spiritual dedication of its infinite repercussions on the whole team. You know, so I'm thinking the strategies before us are about saturation point. You know, when the atmosphere becomes so saturated with lies, it's like you have salt dissolved in water, and then you add one more grain of salt and it falls out. You know, it's like the really still useful movie 7 Days in May, where it gets corrupt, 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 and then it's like, no, can't. People back out. I talk a lot with NSA whistleblowers, right? And they were in the NSA for 40 years, right? And then they were like, after 40 years, that's enough, right? You know, and then but everybody's got their moral point, and I think that behooves all of us to be inviters. I love the Saturn-Uranus, the wolf-coyote mating. Scientists call them coy wolves. I call them wolf-oties. Just a few last little bits I want to bring in here. I also want to, you know, invite in all the ancestors we love and wonderful buddy Jim Lewis, years and years ago, creator of astrocartography. But he said to me, look at Jupiter and Pluto squared. He said, incredible for publicity. I thought that was odd, but I noticed it was true enough, you know, and I go, well, why, being more mythological? Well, Jupiter is storytelling, Pluto's death and rebirth, what gets us through the underworld. We're all gathering that, what gets us through. You know, but so Pluto's, one of a great totem for Pluto is the phoenix, right? So I go, Jupiter, Pluto, the story of the phoenix. And one of the less known stories is that before the phoenix bursts into flames and is reborn, it sings this hauntingly beautiful song. And all of creation stops what they're doing and listens to the phoenix's song and is reminded of what's really important: beauty and art and kindness and symbiosis and syncretism and reciprocal blessing. And then the phoenix bursts into flames. Right? So in a collective transit that, you know, language grants us access to the realm it describes. If we can speak of it, we can journey there. Before all of us, there's a backstage whisper to each person that says, what is your phoenix's song? And in what form would you sing it? And it doesn't want a snappy answer. It wants to be a koan. You know, it wants to add wonder. And that's where we just want to honor Neptune before we complete. You know, We wonder, even when we use the word wonder and as a mudra, you know, we hold our arms in a graceful curve, turning our bodies into a magnetizing, beseeching chalice of inquiry. We wonder. You know, and see, the ancient world, not knowing was considered a fantastic accomplishment. Look, those humans have run out of certainty. What a great accomplishment for them. You know, now the divine can find them. You know, so certainty is a booby prize, right? But to wonder is to invite in the answer. We wonder, each one of us, perhaps, what our phoenix's song is. And the internal dedication magnetizes the outward opportunity. Now, and the poignancy of so much death, you know, when the Bamiyan Buddhas were exploded in Afghanistan, but we say, may the invisible, prayerful dedication embodied in those Buddhas be released into the memosphere by the destruction of their form. And when so much was destroyed in Syria, you know, we can only say, may the beauty that was embodied, you know, be wafted out into the world. So Neptune and Pisces, I think of it as the backstage gods are convening, going, we're going to have to either kill the humans or heal them. Let's try healing them first. Let's make everything that has ever moved humans to conscious kinship available for fresh, vernacular, innovative expression. Every piece of poetry, every beautiful astrological language, everything. You know, everything is working, is wishing for us. It's like the backstage gods are eating popcorn, watching, going, oh my God, God, I hope they ask us in. You know, we would love to be invited incarnationally on stage, but we have to be invited as part of the ally etiquette. And I think of that Neptune thing, that all the myths, everything we love, are all rooting for us. You know, part of it is who brought what to this renaissance, you know, every piece of so many dedicated people here who have so much great knowledge. I really loved going to the Egyptian mythology lecture this afternoon. I go, wow, all the geometry, it's a DMT experience. Well, because we don't rule out the entheogenic plants that are also trying to help us, going, you can study Egyptian geometry or dose on DMT. It's, oh my God, the geometry. But the Mabinogian, the Welsh Arthurian legends gathered in 10th century, but the stories are much older. There's a powerful moment where the elders get together and go, uh-oh, the men just found out they have something to do with children, and things were going so well before then, and we can see what's going to happen. We can see women and children as property, and we can see that humans are going to journey on their individual journey, you know, until they lose kinship not only with each other but with nature, until the earth herself might die. Think about this. And then at that time, you know, some people will keep all the value of their individual journey, right? But join back into salam, into oneness as well. And we go, well, you know, as we have a number of different toasts to finish, I am going to wrap up, but we go, how about a toast to our willingness to be those people, right? Who's up for that? We are willing that. that influential, sane reverence assume cultural narrative lead. Yeah, there's a wonderful quote that says, listen for your destiny, and when it calls, release your plans. So there's two last blessings I love. There's the circus blessing, which is alley-oop, right? It's when you help somebody to reach the trapeze. So let's just do a little alley-oop toast. Alley-oop, alley-oop, right? And the last is a word, Eritrean word, that is beautiful. It's Aizan, and it means may you have the power to sustain you on a difficult, powerful journey before you. So let us say Aizan, Aizan, Aizan. Thank you, team. There we have it. Thank you.
Caroline, we want to thank you very much for taking the time to come here and to speak to all of us. Ms. Button?
No. Ah, magic?
Caroline, we want to thank you very much for joining us tonight and speaking with us and entertaining us and teaching us with words of wisdom and beauty. Thank you very much for teaching us tonight. Thank you. And soon the music and dancing will start. And we'd like to thank Madeline and Doug for that. And we hope you all enjoy the rest of the evening.